So, this morning from the Pacifica Radio Archives, we'll hear about a man better known for his silence. Joanne Griffith is in Los Angeles and can tell us more. Joanne.
You always kind of run into a little bit of trouble doing this segment if you want to talk about a man who was known for not actually talking for the bulk of his career. And we had something similar when we talked about Harold Lloyd. I guess it would have been around about a year ago now. And it's the same thing with Marcel Marceau. Most people will know him as Bip the Clown. But Marcel Marceau was born on the 22nd of March 1923, had an extensive career as the French actor and mime, and we're going to find out a little bit more about his work and his legacy tonight. And we're joined by Janine Thompson. She's a movement theatre specialist and also associate professor of theatre at the Ohio State University, and worked extensively with Marcel Marceau as far back as 1985. Good evening to you, Janine.
Good evening.
Now, this is actually a really interesting story as to how you and Marcel Marceau actually connected. So how on earth did you meet, and how did you come to later work with him so extensively?
Well, everything really started in 1985. I was on tour in California and going to see Marceau perform in Berkeley, California. And I was with a friend of mine, Greg Goldston, who is a mime artist out of Los Angeles. And we were trying to get backstage. And we slipped a note, and we let Marceau know that we were in the audience. And Greg Goldston had a school in Ohio, and we were hoping that maybe Marceau had recognized his name. And we were able to slip backstage at the end of his show, and we met and we talked for quite a while. And sure enough, he was definitely aware of Greg and his school, and he had some of our students in his American seminars that he taught in Ann Arbor, Michigan during that time. And so he invited both of us to his next seminar in Ann Arbor that coming July. However, he invited Greg to participate. He invited me to observe, since I was an actress and a dancer. So we went to Ann Arbor, and Marceau was so impressed by Greg and our students and our work ethic that he invited the faculty of our mime school to come to his school in Paris and to give him feedback on how our students were able to advance so quickly in his style of mime. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of us starting to produce his American seminars in 1986. Wow. And in 1987, he made me a demonstrator of his American seminars with teaching his technique and choreography.
So what kind of defines a Marcel Marceau mime? Because it must be the hardest thing, and I don't understand, as someone who makes her living from actually talking a lot, how is it that you can then spend a whole career not talking at all and literally just communicating with expressions on your face, your hands, and your body? How do you do that?
Well, fortunately, neither I nor Marceau actually did that. He was, as you may know, was extremely talkative. And when you would get him in a social situation, at first he was extremely shy. But when you would get him talking, especially about history and art, culture, society, he would speak on and on. And when he would do lectures for people, he would be terrified before he spoke, and he would pace back and forth in the backstage of a theater. But once he got going, he was very open and spoke eloquently. But he was also the master of being able to express the essence of thought and emotion through gesture. And this was truly what he was genius at.
Marcel Marceau didn't start life as Marcel Marceau. It was Marcel Mangle. I hope I actually said that correctly. Why did he actually change his last name to Marceau?
Well, he was working, he and his brother were working in the French underground during World War II, and he was raised Jewish, and in order to work in the underground and to be able to support the salvation of Jews at that time, he worked as a he smuggled passports back and forth, and he eventually ended up changing his name to Marceau for security's sake.
How did he go from working as part of the French underground to becoming a mime? Those are two very different paths in life.
Well, his father loved art, and he was raised with watching Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. And he loved acting. He loved assuming other characters, and he went off and studied acting at one of the premier schools in Paris, the Charles Dolan School for Dramatic Arts. And in his acting training, he was really taken by his movement teacher. And his movement teacher was Etienne de Creux. And he was really one of the premier contemporary mime artists who was breaking down and developing a real technique for mime. And Marceau was so taken by this that he decided that that's really what he wanted to do. Instead of being a speaking actor, he found the beauty, the eloquence in the movement, in moving. And he then pursued establishing a company, and this would have been in the late 40s, establishing the company and then establishing a solo career.
Well, that's a nice place to stop and listen to some of Marcel Marceau himself. There are actually a number of recordings, four in total, of Marcel Marceau held in the archives over the years, and from 1968 to from 1970. And this one that we're actually going to hear from 1960. Now, Marcel Marceau sat down with Pacifica's Jean Bruck and started by answering the question, how do you become a mime?
Well, it is a very hard training. It is a training, the same training as for every art, a musician, a dancer, even a speaking actor. We have our own technique, you know. There are definite rules about pantomime, because, as you know, mime is the art of identifying oneself with elements which surround us, and it is the art of expressing feelings with attitudes and not expressing, replacing words through gestures. That makes this art of mime a very ancient art and a very delicate one.
It's not a matter, then, of specifics, but of, in a sense, cartooning, of recreating something
That's
in a different
right.
form.
Recreating life in different forms and moving by poetry.
How old is he, exactly?
Well, I think it is as old as man exists. But we know great periods among the Greeks, the Romans, in the Middle Ages, in the 19th century, among the Commedia dell'arte, in the 19th century with De Bureau, who was the greatest mime in France, and in the 20th century we have a revival of mimes in the silent screen with Chaplin, Stan Laurel Hardy, Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, what we call l'école burlesque américaine, the American burlesque school, and then through Copeau and the new form of theater through Jouvet, Charles Dunin. A new school opened, and then there was Etienne de Creux, who was the first who taught a theory of new mime, and then he was also the teacher of Jean-Louis Barrault, who is now a great metteur en scène in France. And, of course, I went as a pupil to de Creux, and then I decided to make a revival of this form of art, which had been so successful in the past, that is, not, I don't like the word successful, let us say, which had a tremendous importance in the theater life, and now we have to create a new repertory, a new style, and I devoted myself completely to the resurrection of the art of mime in France.
Marcel Marceau there, speaking with June Bruck back in 1960. My guest this evening is Gillian Thompson. She's a movement theatre specialist and associate professor of theatre at The Ohio State University. And Gillian, we should actually mention that the university holds the Marcel Marceau collection. Just tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, we really started working on that when we first produced a residency of Marceau's in 1995. He was really looking for an American home, a place to be able to develop students, a place to hold his archives, his films, his writings, his programs. And so we started working towards this, and now we have a wealth of film and video papers. We have a very large collection of his touring materials from his first performance in the United States up until when he passed in 2007.
He had a long career. As we said, he was born in 1923. He passed in 2007. And it seemed as though he was really prolific in the amount of work that he was doing. And I did chuckle, and I'd forgotten about this, but I was watching a little video clip on YouTube of Marcel Marceau with Michael Jackson. you know, who really, when you look at Michael Jackson's dancing style and you look at Marcel Marceau, it's like, yeah, of course, it was Michael. In a way that Michael Jackson
Absolutely.
Was doing. You know, so how is it that Marcel Marceau's career changed, or his style of movement changed and developed over the years? And what impact did it then have on modern audiences, you know, like a Michael Jackson?
Well, I think that he started out from De Crew, and it was very technical, very specific as far as making invisible props visible to the audience. But then Marceau started to take it more into an art of poetry and working on creating pantomimes where he was a character telling a specific story in a specific environment, and also creating pieces that were more within the realm of metamorphosis, where he was a person or a thing that changed, like a youth, maturity, old age, and death. He would express just standing in place, or the creation of the world. I think that he and Etienne de Crew gleaned a lot also from modern dance. And you can see that there's a lot of switching, sharing of information and technique in modern dance and mime. But in contemporary art, specifically with Michael Jackson, was brilliant in knowing that Marceau knew something that he wanted to know, and that was how he was distilling time and some of his illusions, specifically Walking Against the Wind. It was Michael Jackson learning Marcel Marceau's Walk Against the Wind, where that was how Michael Jackson began to develop moonwalking, his moonwalk. That was really, it was based on Marcel Marceau's Walk Against the Wind. And you can see that connection into hip-hop and all different types of dance that is current right now, you know, that you can see on all sorts of, like, So You Think You Can Dance, shows like that. You can see the isolation and the manipulation of time that is at the root of mime. You can see it in dance today.
Well, let's take another listen to Marcel Marceau. Here he is again speaking with June Bruck back in 1960.
What are the limits? What is the scope of this mime theater? In your first visit, at least the visit I recall at the City Center, you simply, I thought, displayed a series of vignettes and of techniques and your character. A blip, is it?
Well, you see, the character... First, I had to create a personage that is one man alone, involved in adventures tragic comedy and pathos, you see, and creating a personage who would be what we call the tradition, the continuation of the French Pierrot. Pierrot was a tramp with a white makeup, an harlequin, like Chaplin did in the movies, you see. And going from that on, from this only personage who creates everything without nothing, that is, who makes visible what is invisible, who creates a whole world, who makes concrete what is abstract, because there is nothing on a stage. The stage is empty and we create a whole world. Then I wanted to project also our company, that is, that there are other laws, because when I play alone, there are other laws than playing with the company, because here the scenery is here, the music, because there is beep, there is no music. And you know that the music is done with silence and silence with music. But in the silence, there is a poetical appeal for the public, because they don't need music, they don't need words. Because the gesture gives the impact. But with the company, the music is a counterpoint. The things changed. It is, if you want, it is another medium, exactly as you spoke about limits. We have to know every limit in each form. For instance, when B plays alone, there are limits. When the company plays, there are limits. In the theater also there are limits, you know. In opera there are limits. Every art has its limits. And because an art has to know its limits, it can go richer and deeper in its limits.
Marcel Marceau there, speaking back in 1960. Janine, it's interesting how he talks about, you know, kind of effectively pushing the limits, but also having to know the limits. How did Marceau push the limits of his own work throughout his career, would you say?
Well, two things that mean a great deal to me. That was in pushing his material, his choreography, as a solo artist from telling relatively simple stories of an everyday man to telling quite complex abstract stories and risking putting both side by side in a show. I think that was really pushing the limits of the art form and of his audiences. But he also pushed limits with his company, where he was really trying to find, if his heart was, I think the world knows him primarily as a solo artist, but what he always talked about was how much he loved having a company and how much he truly found that he could do the most with his art with a company. And I'm very proud of that. The last time I saw him perform live, which was just right before he passed, he was performing with his company. And he was, interestingly, when he talks about limits, he interestingly was with his company, he was starting to introduce a lot of elements of theater and dance. So it's interesting that he himself is this great mime artist, but I found that with the capacity of his company, it allowed him to not only stick to what was his heart, but to soar even further. Another quality that I found that he was really pushing his limits with was in some of the pieces that he wrote at the end of his life. And one was The Eater of Hearts, which we actually motion captured at OSU a couple of years ago. We motion captured some of his signature movement, and we did his entire piece of The Eater of Hearts. And this piece, this is not exactly what I would consider Marcel Marceau show material. It was about a serial killer of children.
Oh, yes. not such a happy topic then.
Exactly. And I was astounded the first time I saw him perform it live that he was doing this. But he he shared, one, it was stunningly done, beautifully done, and he turned the character around at the end, where he he, instead of taking the heart out of the children, he gave this child his heart. So he did turn it around at the end, but still, he was pushing the limits, even with his choreography. And one of my favorite pieces is called Bip Remembers, and that was really him tipping his hat to his family, which meant more to him than anything, and telling the story of growing up in Paris and his country being invaded and his father dying in a concentration camp, and then coming out of that and being able to share share his love with the world and being welcomed and embraced by people from around the world.
Marcel Marceau really had an extensive career. You mentioned Bip, and that's probably one of his best-known characters, Bip the Clown. But we also have to remember that he featured in films as well. But what do you see as his legacy, what he has left to the world of theatre and mime and entertainment?
That's a really great question. As a human being, I believe that what he wanted us to do, and whether we were a teacher or a painter or a doctor or a journalist, what he really wanted us to do was to do what we did with love. And in our pursuit of what we were doing to make the struggles of humanity a bit better, a bit more understandable, to help us gain a deeper sense of empathy for each other and for humanity. And as an artist, I really believe that his hope was for all people and from all parts of the world to be able to experience the power of art, to communicate the struggles, the hopes, the fears, the joys that all humanity shares.
Janine Thompson, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you tonight about Marcel Marceau. That's Janine Thompson, the movement theatre specialist, associate professor of theatre at The Ohio State University, and friend of Marcel Marceau from 1985. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you as well, Joanne, for bringing Janine in as well to tell us about Marcel Marceau. I still can't get over him talking like that. Yeah, well, there you go.